We've watched in the last few years as summer fire seasons burned more land and created more smoke. It felt like the last two summers featured long stretches of staying indoors, avoiding unhealthy levels of smoke. And it stands to reason that changing climate might play a part, either in the fires or what happens afterward. We'll focus now on the afterward, because a study led by a Colorado State University researcher shows that forests regenerate slower now after a fire, if they regenerate at all. The world of now is harder on young trees. Let's get the specifics. Our guest is Camille Stevens-Ruman, who's an assistant professor at Colorado State University in the Department of Forest and Rangeland Stewardship. Dr. Stevens-Ruman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what was the starting point of the research? Where were you beginning from?
Yeah, so this was a project, a collaborative project among multiple PhD students that all collected similar data kind of across the Rockies. And we really wanted to see, you know, we'd all looked at different patterns of regeneration on these smaller study areas. And we wanted to look at more regionally how these areas are changing as a result of climate change, if climate is a factor that we need to be considering when we think about these post-fire environments, and if we could pick that up on a more regional scale, you know, rather than looking at these small, very specific study areas.
So when we talk about regional scale, this was generally Rocky Mountain. You had lots of data to choose from. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we, in total, measured about 63,000 seedlings across almost 1,500 sites. And our study sites ranged from central Colorado to Glacier National Park to the north. And then we kind of went into eastern Washington on the furthest west area.
Is that area in eastern Washington a semi-Rocky Mountain kind of climate?
Yeah, I mean, those are definitely some of our most, our wettest sites. But yeah, all similar kind of forest structure, mixed conifer forest, kind of like the eastern side of the Cascades.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do have questions about the Cascades as we go along here. So definitely more like Oregon and Washington east side forests.
Exactly.
Okay, so what you had a couple of ranges of years here you were working with. What were the bases of comparison?
Yeah, so we looked at our study fires happened between 1988 to 2011. So we looked at the Yellowstone fires, you know, that are really famous from 1988 all the way through some fires in 2011. And when we were looking at the climate record of that period, we noticed that the late 80s and the early 90s through about 2000 were really cool and wet compared to the average climate on these sites. And then after 2000, pretty much all of the climate every year is kind of hotter and drier. You know, we've consistently seen that across the United States. I think we're at, you know, the 10 of the last of the hottest 15 years have been since 2000. So we broke up our data into those two time frames, from 1988 to 1999 and then 2000 to 2011. To look at if, you know, those hotter and drier conditions we're seeing after those fires in 2000 had a different impact on the subsequent community compared to those pre-2000.
Could you have gone any further back in time? I guess I'm curious about the not just the quality, but the quantity of data you might have had pre-1988.
Yeah, I mean, our federal agencies and land management agencies have been very good at suppressing fires. So before 1988, there aren't a whole lot of data points of fires. And that's kind of also the range of the satellite imagery that we have to kind of assess and choose locations for our study areas. So that's kind of why we chose to cut it off there. We probably could have gone a little bit earlier, but there were hardly any fires, large fires, you know, before the 1980s for several decades.
And so were we talking public land here or a mix of public and private?
So all of our sites are on public land, mm-hmm. But it includes Forest Service, Park Service, as well as some county and city lands.
And so is it all managed land? I mean, is some of it allowed to, some of it in wilderness, for example?
Yeah, so that we do have some sites in wilderness. We specifically chose to go to areas that hadn't had extensive management after the fire. So we didn't look at any planted tree seedlings or any areas that had salvage logging or things like that.
Okay, that's an important thing. I was going to ask about the replanting part of this. So you did not look at places where there was a physical effort by humans to go in and plant the trees, just voluntary, the forest coming back on its own?
Exactly. Yep. Okay. Natural regeneration.
Camille Stevens-Ruman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an assistant professor at Colorado State University, the lead author of a study called Evidence for Declining Forest Resilience to Wildfires Under Climate Change in the December 12th issue of Ecology Letters. She's the lead of seven other authors, eight altogether. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Our phone number is 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And to the major point then, Camille, how different were the two periods of time in the ability of a forest to regenerate after a fire?
Yeah, so before 2000, we had about 80% of our sites regenerating adequately. But after 2000, we're looking at more in the 50 to 70% range, depending on the forest type. So basically, we're seeing regeneration failures on where there's not even a single seedling on our sites on about 33% of our sites. So a third of our sites that burned after 2000 have no trees recovering. And that's kind of a pretty stark difference when you think about a third of the landscapes that are burning in these much larger fires not having any trees coming back.
Is it a case of waiting long enough, though? I mean, is it possible that there's still a chance that the trees could come up in those places? It hasn't been enough years?
Absolutely. That's always a possibility. You know, we did just look at this kind of short snap of time. But we do know that a lot of regeneration happens in those first few years post-fire. So we would expect to see some regeneration on a site, maybe not enough to meet the amount of trees that were there before, but we should see some. The fact that there's none on a lot of sites, on a third of our sites, is what's concerning, because that means that, where are those seeds coming from? Are there going to be any seeds that are available in the future that could repopulate those sites? Those kind of issues come up if we don't see anything coming back, 5-10 years after a fire.
All right, let me underscore that again. So on a third of the sites you measured in the second group, I mean the climate change group, there were no seedlings that came back.
That's correct, yeah.
Wow. Let us take a call here. We have Pam in Dexter, Oregon on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Camille Stevens-Ruman from Colorado State.
Hi. Well, really quickly, I've been wondering, the south-facing hills, it seems like, would be drier and hotter, after they're cut, and they would probably, in my mind, not grow back as quickly, just because, as we've gotten hotter and drier summers, then it just makes it harder for the south-facing hills. But I called because Dominic De La Sala of the GS Institute in Ashland testified to Congress, I think it was September 27th, about the resiliency of forests, because there's a big push with House H.R. 2936, mm-hmm. Resilient Forest Act, to increase logging. And they're basically saying, oh, you don't like the smoky air in the summer, then we need to cut more trees. It's kind of ridiculous. But he testified that the native forests on public lands are much more resilient to forest fires than the tree plantations and the second and third growth cuts on private forest land. And just real quickly, our forests in Western Oregon are second only to the mangroves and the carbon that they sequester. So it just makes so much sense to keep the native forests intact, the older forests intact, because they're more resilient to forest fire. Because once they're cut, it dries out. And like your guest is saying, that with the hotter, drier weather, they're less likely to grow back. And then also, planting like more ponderosa pines, more drought-resistant types of trees when they do replant.
Okay.
Thanks for the show.
All right, thanks for the points, Pam. Appreciate that. Camille, some thoughts?
Yeah, so to address the first one about south-facing slopes, we definitely do, that was one of the factors that we considered. And because our climate data doesn't really go as localized as those north and south-facing slopes, we couldn't kind of address that in this paper. But some of my co-authors on this paper have looked at that, and they are seeing pretty dramatic increases in the elevation that regeneration is happening on those south-facing slopes. So we're talking about kind of the lowest elevation where forests are occurring, that especially on south-facing slopes, regeneration is happening only at higher elevations, especially when you compare it to north-facing slopes. In terms of planting and logging, you know, again, we didn't look at areas that had been extensively logged, and these are all post-fire areas, so they're not areas that are getting these heavy treatments like your listener is thinking about. But they do, one of the recommendations and one of the things that we're working on now is kind of working with managers to think about how we can adjust our planting recommendations so that we reflect kind of the current and future climate rather than the past climate, and think about planting those more drought-resistant species, definitely.
Forest fires, climate change, and what happens afterward. The study seems to indicate that after fires now, it's a lot harder for forests to grow back, particularly in drier places. Camille Stevens-Ruman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an assistant professor at the Colorado State University Department of Forest and Rangeland Stewardship. There are a couple things here, some key phrases that really jumped out at me. Dry forests at the edge of their climatic tolerance. So, you know, these are forests that were kind of close to the edge already, it sounds like. And has climate change essentially pushed them over, and is fire the mechanism by which they're essentially, they cease to exist at a certain set of conditions?
Yeah, that's definitely our concern, right? I think we often think about climate change as something that's going to be impacting us in the future. And the reality is that these disturbances, like fire, is kind of facilitating those changes happening now. And those dry forests are the ones that are that we're seeing the most dramatic change. So while across all of our forests we're seeing 33% of our sites not coming back, on those dry forest types it's about 50% having no trees coming back at all. So that's that's over half of the forest, and it's definitely those that are at the driest and hottest locations.
Let's take another call. We have John and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Camille Stevens-Ruman.
So I had an observation and that I hope will elicit a response. When I was a kid, which was 55 years ago, in Lassen Park there was a fire and no trees came back. And then Manzanita came up, and it took 40 years for that to turn back into trees, maybe 35. But for at least 25 years, I would go through there frequently, and there would be no trees, just that manzanita. And then a few started poking through, and now all the manzanita is gone, and it's all trees again. So my question maybe is that time frame of years, is it different in different places? Because it took 50 years for that to go from fire to forest again with a big treeless space.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent question. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, again, I mean, we can't definitively say that these sites are never going to become forests again. I think the main concern with our study and the patterns that we're seeing is that the conditions after a fire, which we know are really important for regeneration, whether you look at 3 years or 50 years, is that at some point the climate and the weather is conducive to tree growth. So if we don't have those cool, wet conditions happening anymore, are we going to see that pulse of regeneration, even if it is 40 years down the line? I would say that in general, again, we are, at least on our sites, we saw a high correlation between areas that had regeneration and immediately post-fire or, you know, within the first 3 to 5 years, and then those sites that had abundant regeneration at 25 years post-fire. So there is some correlation that if you have some, immediately after the fire, you're more likely to have a forest again. But we can't say definitively that these areas will never be a forest.
So the example John gave with the manzanita coming up first and then the bigger trees displacing them down the road, you would still see seedlings early on, is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. Oh. We would likely see, you know, at least small trees that maybe wasn't observed as you walk through the area, but we spend a lot of time, you know, crawling on the ground looking at individual baby trees.
Well, as long as we're talking about baby trees, why don't we just get into the infant mortality of trees generally? I mean, are they much more likely to die in the first couple of years of life than much later on?
They are definitely, and that varies greatly by species. So it's hard to say that we expect, 50% of the trees to die. But there is kind of a high percentage of mortality, especially if you have hotter and drier conditions or, heavy management or heavy browsing by various, deer and elk and things like that.
So if you get into a situation where the forest has not regenerated after a fire, I mean, what are we looking at? Are we looking at the change to grassland or scrubland of some kind?
Yeah, without active management across our sites, because we don't have a huge shrub component along most of our sites, we're likely seeing a transition to more grassland ecosystems. In other places, like in California, you know, around Yosemite, they've been seeing a lot of transitions to kind of manzanita or chaparral ecosystems as a result of these fire, high-severity fires.
You mentioned stuff east of the Cascades and some correlations there. Can these findings at all be extrapolated, certainly with caution, to Cascade forests, wetter forests, or others?
Well, I would say this definitely applies to the eastern Cascades. For wetter forests, especially because of the fire regime and, you know, forest types are very different, it's hard to take it all the way to the east side, or excuse me, to the west side of those mountains. It, you know, to some degree, a lot of this activity has to do with, and these concerns have to do with the changes in fire regimes, given that we're seeing more severe fires or larger fires that were not typical in the historic fire regimes. So, you know, we're talking about forests that burned at relatively low to moderate severity in the past, and now they have these huge areas that are burning at high severity. Whereas on the western coast of the Cascades, high severity fires did occur, and that was a little bit more common. So the regeneration patterns may be a bit different in those ecosystems.
So plain and simply, more recently, in the 15-year window you show, the more recent of the two windows, since climate change has begun to take effect with hotter and drier conditions, the forests just don't seem to come back, and in some cases come back at all after a fire.
Yep, and that's the concern. Are those much-loved forests going to continue to come back?
All right, a lot to think about here. The report is called Evidence for Declining Forest Resilience to Wildfires Under Climate Change. It is by Camille Stevens-Ruman and seven other authors. Camille is an assistant professor in the Department of Forest and Rangeland Stewardship at Colorado State University. The piece is published in the December 12th issue of Ecology Letters. Camille, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.